Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus on Albany. I'm Cynthia Pooler, and my guest today is Dan Platt. Dan is the Green Party candidate for mayor of the city of Albany. So, Dan, how's it going?
Very good.
Great. Now, what's the latest with your campaign?
Well, today is the first day of petitioning, so I'm going to be out there gathering signatures from the 200 Greens in Albany. My goal is around 60, which is three times the amount that I actually need. You always want,
okay,
as petitioning as a rule, you always want at least 50% more than what's required, because they,
right,
some people might sign wrong, or the BOE will find problems if they don't like you as a candidate. There's particular,
right,
motives to play. But it's also just a matter of, like, well, if you make it easy for them, they'll strike you from the ballot. But you don't want to make it easy. And having extra signatures kind of acts as a buffer. They don't bother checking if you have enough.
So, actually, without getting any extra, how many do you need?
Like I said, it's about 20. So the rules state that it's usually 5% of the enrolled members of the party that you're in the primary for. If it's,
right,
if you're running as an independent, right, which a lot of people, it's fairly popular to do that,
right,
for one reason or another, ideologically, it's 5% of enrolled voters, which is why it's
okay,
a lot more petitions, right, signatures you have to gather.
Okay, now, tonight Kathy Sheehan is having a $2,500 a head fundraiser on State Street. Were you invited?
No, I was not invited. I have a crowdfunding page, and I will be fundraising via crowdfunding, the platforms of the future. Crowdfunding means I'm getting smaller donations from more people.
Okay, terrific.
And not from one room.
So the latest news in the city of Albany is the possible looming budget deficit from $12.5 million to $23 million. If you were elected mayor in the city of Albany, what would you do to deal with that crisis?
So, important thing, I actually perused and read quite a bit of the report that stated that, and it was more like it goes up to that amount if we do nothing. I think that was the kind of worst-case scenario. And it said if we do all of these austerity reforms, the deficit will go down like $4 million every year, so that by the time it's 2020, the deficit will be like $4 million instead of 12 or less. But that's with all the austerity reforms. Some were listed in the Times Union, but there are some more interesting ones. For example, the city doesn't have a safety officer. We spend $9 million every year on workers' compensation, something that obviously should be spent if someone's hurt. But who knows? We don't have good data since there's no safety officer on what all these injuries are. Is it just someone stubbing their toe and taking a week off? Is it people throwing their back out when they're garbage collecting? Is it standards that we could change so that they don't have to lift as much, or, you know, there are ways of dealing with that, which then reduce the amount of injuries. So if we actually lower the amount of injuries, we could strike $1 million from the budget there. Let's see, because the last 4 years, the mayor has been instituting, if not the mayor, but the city in general, has been instituting a new kind of budgeting software or something that collects data. Anyway, basically all the, let's say, the fine, what do you call it? Some of the accountants and whatever is being automated. So there are, they don't need as many payroll clerks. And every department has like two. So this is like the person who hands out the checks. Now in the state, when I worked there, the HR person was the person who was also the payroll clerk. So you could put those duties together. One of the recommendations is to reduce payroll clerks. There's like at least 10 of them. That's $500,000 right there. So, and there's all these other, so that's just two that stuck out to me. Obviously there are others, other kind of reforms. Now, austerity should be, you know, it's the way the system is set up. Austerity is the only option. That's why, as a system change candidate, we need to look broader at the broader problems. So, for example, let's see, how much of it? 12% of the expenses of the budget is debt service. So that's like interest we're paying to KeyBank for various bonds and loans, or maybe the state as well. That's debt service. And so that's just, and it's 12% of the budget. So think about that. And this goes to the fact that the 40% of the cost of everything in our society, sneakers, food, is from paying bank interest. Because eventually, you know, originally someone had to take out a loan to do anything. That is why I'm on a platform, is to have public financing of some kind, whether it's a state bank or a bank that the city runs, or for to have an amount of capital starting to start with. So maybe it could be regional. And this would free us from the private banking of Wall Street that would have high interest rates. With public banks, interest rates can be near zero. The actual cost of loaning money, not for profit. And that is extremely important to free us from private money, from loans and from interest, to free us from being debt slaves. Because if you're a college student, if you're a small business owner, you're or a mortgage holder, you are a debt slave. You are working to pay off the bank for a loan.
Right.
Not just the loan, right, but the interest. You're paying them for the privilege of taking the loan out. And that goes all the way up to our money itself. We pay rent to use currency. And that inflates the price of everything.
Now, one of the things that have been talked about for years, and I brought it I've talked about this in a few interviews already. What's your feeling about the Harriman campus? You know, that would be a big answer to closing the deficit gap.
So that's state-owned land, but let's say we make a deal with the state to actually make it city-owned, or actually it would be worth making a deal with them to, and this is just my general idea, to subdivide the land. As it is, like with most neoliberal policy, it's about finding a way of to help big corporations. And they're basically looking for a big buyer because it's a big amount of land, or a large amount of land. And that's a problem because it's not too desirable, or at least there aren't enough large buyers because, well, there's just so few who could afford to buy all of it. So obviously the answer is to subdivide the land so smaller parcels can be sold, make them small enough, and even someone like me could afford it. But it needs to be, you know, you need to subdivide it, and that means you need to build some new roads, so some more infrastructure would have to go in, or a lot of the infrastructure, like the big ring road, the 3-lane, 4-lane ring road, would need to be pulled out. Ideally, to integrate it into the street grid, at least somewhat, at least between Washington and Western. Because at the moment, it is a big suburban campus that's right on the edge of where our cityscape ends. And that's, it's bad urbanism. Good urbanism is smaller blocks. In fact, there's a new movie about Jane Jacobs, Citizen Jane, it's called.
That was a great
and
movie.
That's one of her. And I learned a lot about her in school, of course. So I know everything you kind of need to know. And one of her main recommendations for good cities is smaller blocks, right? Smaller blocks because you can have more on them. Smaller blocks make them more walkable for our seniors and for kids, and there's simply more space to do things. When you have larger parcels like the first prize plant or, let's say, the parking crater downtown by the bus station where the convention center would have been, that's a big parcel that only a big operator can do anything with. And that limits what small people or even the city themselves can do with.
Right. I'm glad you brought up the movie Citizen Jane. I found that movie to be very, very interesting, how she was able to take on Robert Moses, who was almost godlike in New York City back in like the 50s and early 60s. And what I found so interesting about it, the timing of it, is the Wonder Woman movie came out, which is fiction. And, you know, people flocking to the movie, watching it and commenting on it. But Jane Jacobs was a real Wonder Woman. How she took on the establishment and won. You know, for everybody out there who's interested in the city of Albany and urban planning, please go see that movie. It's at the Spectrum. So I just wanted to throw my two cents in there.
Yeah, with Jane Jacobs. But she didn't do it alone.
She didn't do it alone. But she was the one that spearheaded the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
she was an organizer. And rule one of organizing is to talk to people. And that's kind of what I'm doing here with the campaign. So, I'm trying to follow by those examples.
So one of the things that happened in the city of Albany is the city hires consultants to supposedly solve problems, and consultants cost a lot of money. How do you feel about consultants?
I would say my politics are the exact opposite of that approach. That approach is usually called technocracy or governance by the elite. You hire consultants because they quote unquote know better. They're experts. They have speciality. They're specialized. But they have no contextual knowledge of Albany. They're looking at the budget as a sheet of numbers that need to be balanced and not people's lives and a city that's living and breathing. Democracy, or populist governance, is from below. The wisdom of crowds. This is the title of a book that was published a few years ago, which I now have on my shelf. So I'll be reading that. But it's the wisdom of crowds, and something I know too well, that's online. It's kind of a hive mind where you put in a question and you'll get a sizable answer or a conversation that leads to a very deep answer. Consultants can give you a limited, unsubstantial answer, an answer that is good for a press conference, that can paper over a problem, but isn't a deep solution. It can never be a systematic change for a systematic problem because they are part of the problem, that culture of hiring consultants, hiring people to do what a crowd or citizens can do. Here's an I wanted to talk about how towards the end of your interview of her, Mayor Sheehan, and she's not the only one who does this, so I do not want to put it on her alone. But she mentioned now there are all these employers who have positions to fill, but there's no one qualified to fill them. This enrages me a bit because I'm very well educated, have a degree, went to school, and so have many others who live in Albany. And the only jobs that are available or will hire are service, minimum wage, or thereabouts. Or entry level, and sometimes entry level. Mm-hmm. You know, there was a poverty workshop. why are teenagers able to get a job? And many employers simply don't want to hire them because they're not experienced. They want them to be older. Well, when then they are older, they say, oh, well, you haven't had any jobs before, so you don't have any work experience, so why should I hire you? It's a catch-22, and that's kind of what happened with me. You know, I held off, and it's like, oh, well, your resume is empty, right? So I've had to spend 10 years just working service sector jobs before I'm even qualified for something a little more intense, even though I've been trained as a worker, and particularly I went to college to train as a citizen, to learn how to be a learner, right, to actually get an education, because when we try to just meet the requests of employers, school becomes just job training. And particularly, as it has been in the last decade or so, training for college, which leaves a lot of people behind who aren't interested in college or aren't interested in a professional career, but just a, you know, hands-on technical career or blue collar. And there needs to be diversity in our education system. And that costs a bit more, but it means we actually have a diverse, well-educated workforce and not a workforce that has to be retrained every 10 years because they were trained in a specialized manner, like these consultants are, where they have to relearn their job every 10 years.
Now, do you think that there's enough creative and smart within the city of Albany who can do task force and work on these problems rather than hiring high-priced consultants?
Oh, yes. I have this goes into kind of budget woes or employment woes. The old left idea that being for workers is not only that someone be paid a middle class income, let's say that's $60,000 upwards, but full health care on top of that, plus a pension, plus other benefits like workers' comp and guaranteed vacation and all that stuff, right? That's something every worker should have. But what happened since the 50s and 60s is that unions became so concerned about their membership, they lost solidarity with all other workers. So you have 100, let's say, just for the sake of it, 100 well taken care of workers, right? Let's say these are the city workers, and then the rest of the city have zero worker rights, zero vacation, zero. They're not paid even a living wage of $15 an hour. I would rather have 1,000 semi-well taken care of workers than 100 well taken care of workers. Mm-hmm. I would rather employ 100 people on these problems with a more minimum stipend of, let's say, a 30 grand salary instead of 10 to 20 people with a 100 grand salary. Because it should be pointed out that the cost of every police officer is about every year is 100 grand. And we have 340 of them. The report suggests we simply get rid of 15. They suggest this because that would just get us in parity with other upstate cities in terms of the ratio of police to population. And I particularly do not think more police is the answer. You do not solve social problems with policing. You solve social problems with social workers. So I would rather hire, instead of 300 cops, 100 social workers at a slightly lower salary of, say, 50 grand, and I can tell you that's a lot more than they're probably usually paid, at half the cost of a police officer, and send them out to do social work, to work programs. Because at the moment, whenever we do that, to hire social workers, we have to do it with a grant that is for a year or two, and then it runs out. And then the partnership with whatever organization on the ground, you know, dissolves because somebody moves away, somebody moves, they climb the ladder to another organization. And nothing is consistent. Even when we have a successful project, the one that was bringing students to school, that students that were coming to school, It took many organizations and many people, but particularly there were city-paid organizers with a grant that were doing that work. But then the grant ran low. They had to cut staff. Then it just became one person trying to manage it, and she couldn't. And so the numbers dipped down again. So the program has, quote-unquote, failed because there was a lack of investment, a lack of consistency in its implementation, which is just like most things that are public, which is why many people have the sense that government can't do anything right, whether it's housing, whether it's healthcare, because of this structural failure that's programmed in. As mayor, I will seek to reverse these things by making things bottom up so that and more dispersed, right? Decentralizing to me means having less people that are well taken care of and having more people that have at least their basic needs met. And to me, that's like a 30 grand income, or at least the medium income in Albany, which is 40 grand. That's the salary I would accept as mayor.
So we touched upon a number of issues that were in the report. What do you feel are the main issues that maybe I've neglected to mention?
I could bring up how I went to the body cameras meeting where the police explained how they were going to roll out the body cameras and other details. Many people, advocates, and et cetera, were asking to make two questions to ensure that, let's say if the cops kill somebody, that their body cameras will, in fact, pick it up, so it will be footage to use in court. So maybe the DA would be forced to actually prosecute somebody once in a while. My concern was, and I'm kind of cynical on how fig leaf such things are, and in particular is at the very end of the meeting, somebody in the back brought up, what does this cost yearly? And they said, well, the money from the Department of Justice, right, this was money that was allocated by the last, Attorney General of the U.S., right, Eric Holder, Obama's.
Okay.
It's half the cost. We have to put up the other half, which is $150,000. That's up front. And then it's $300,000 to maintain every year. All right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the cost of three cops every year, or it's the cost of, well, insert whatever you think you can spend on with $300,000.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of got the gear spinning in my head about just how particularly like the inefficiency, maybe I could call it, of how we spend a lot of money to do a little bit of good instead of spending a lot of money to do a lot of good. And other organizations and nonprofits talk about, you know, being more efficient so that more money does more good. Certainly charities, that's a goal of many charities, because when some of them have a 50% overhead cost, you know, they actually need to think about this if people are going to keep giving them money, donating.
Mm-hmm.
But particularly, I'm not interested in charity, I'm interested in solidarity. And that means, you know, when we collect tax income, you know, which is sort of coercion, you know, we do it by force, we should be making sure that money is being spent for not only the public good, but for as many people's good as possible. And that can sometimes mean giving it directly to people, like in the form of basic income or direct investment in neighborhoods, particularly where there's no private investment happening, because markets are pretty terrible when it comes to investing in infrastructure that everyone uses. Because, hey, you know, they want to charge for people to use it. And you can't do that with roads, most roads. You can't do it with water. Shouldn't do it with electricity, but we do. And that's a lot of our costs, the fact that we have a monopoly power provider, and that's why we should focus on building our own renewable energy capacity, that's solar, that's water, can't really do wind in Albany that well. We can have smaller turbines, but not larger ones. But we could have turbines in the river. The river's always flowing.
So
there's all these different things. Yeah.
Okay. So, what's gonna what will you be doing within the next couple of weeks? Just petitioning, and what else is on your mayoral agenda?
Well, weekends filled with canvassing and events. Go to various meetings, meet with people, talk things out, or learn, depending on the context. But certainly, yeah, petitioning is the next 2 weeks. I have an event at Arbor Hill on the 20th at the Arbor Hill Library. That's kind of part of my library tour, where every month I will have a meet and greet, explain the platform, answer any questions at a library, usually at 6:30 to 8. So the 20th at the Arbor Hill Library. You can contact me at my Facebook page. That's Green Mayor. Platt Green Mayor is also .org is the website, and that's up. And there's a link to the crowdsourcing that I mentioned before at the top of the page where it says donate. And any money that I get will be spent on the usual campaign materials of signs, buttons, stickers. I want a whole case of stickers and buttons, which I make at low cost, by the way, as well as social media advertising to get this message and other messages out in front of as many people as possible, to radicalize, to educate, to get people thinking, and to change minds, to build a new voting bloc.
This has been a great conversation, and as the campaign evolves, you know, I welcome you back on Focus on Albany. So have a good day. Hope you get your 60 signatures today. You've been listening to Green Party candidate for mayor, Dan Platt. If you like this show, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, download on your smartphone, subscribe to iTunes, or if you have a comment about this show, hashtag Focus on Albany. And for those who live in the city of Albany, be sure to listen to WCAALP 107.3 on your FM dial. It's a brand new station in Albany, and within the near future, I will be doing a Monday morning 6 to 10 show. Thank you. Thank you, Dan. And thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a great day.